We are moving into week two of our new series in Habakkuk. So we're going to be doing our Old Testament reading there. Habakkuk chapter 1, we're going to be in verses 2 to 4. If you're reading in the black Bibles that are out in the seats, that's on page 785, one of those little tricky books to find. So 785 if you have those black Bibles. Chapter 1, verses 2 to 4, it says, O Lord, how long shall I cry for help and you will not hear, or cry to you violence and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity, and why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me, strife and contention arise. So the law is paralyzed and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous, so justice goes forth perverted. Our New Testament reading this morning, we're going to be in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 4, and that's on page 1008 in your black Bibles. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Thanks, Ash. So when I was, 8 or 9 years old, my cousin and I loved to play football in the backyard, one-on-one football, one of my favorite pastimes as a kid. Basically, at one point, each other and try to hit each other as hard as you can. Lots of fun. Well, he scored a touchdown at one point, like only once. He didn't do it very often. He couldn't score on me very often. So when he did, he wanted to celebrate. So he was doing his kind of end zone dance. And as he did, he like rolled his ankle and fell to the ground. He's like, Miles, I'm hurt pretty bad. I was like, come on, get up. Like, don't try to end this game after you just scored a touchdown. I know what you're doing. You're going to be fine. He like got up and he kind of fell back down to the ground. He's like, no, really, I don't think I can walk. I was like, okay, whatever. So I helped him get inside, and he told my mom, he said, he called her Aunt Susie, my mom, Aunt Susie, I think I broke my ankle. She said, no, you didn't. Just walk it off. You're fine. Telling somebody to walk off a potential broken ankle is not a great approach, but he tried and literally like fell to the ground, and she was like, okay, I guess we should probably do something about this. So she called his mom. We took him to the hospital. He had broken his ankle. But this was kind of my family's approach. Walk it off. I don't know if your family had the same approach to when things are broken in the world. We kind of just try to walk it off. Just keep going, maybe act like it's not there, and then it will just go away. I called my mom to see if I had this story right, to get her permission for sharing it. She said, yeah, that did definitely happen that way. And actually, she was like, I just take after my parents, because her dad, my grandpa, actually made my uncle walk around with a broken arm for like 3 days before they took him to the hospital, because one of his teachers called the house and said, you guys should take this kid to the doctor. So we come by it honestly. How about you? How do you deal with the brokenness of this world? My family has, for generations, been fairly professional at just looking away from it, right? Trying to pretend that it's not there and maybe it'll just go away. Or maybe you're somebody who is overwhelmed by the brokenness of this world, that all you can do is just look at it, and you become maybe paralyzed by the reality of the brokenness of this world, uncertain how to move forward in the midst of it. Or maybe one of the ways that you deal with the brokenness of this world is that you look across the aisle, and you look at those who are perpetrators of the brokenness of this world, and you think, if we could just get rid of them, if we could just solve this problem of evil through them, it would just go away. I think each one of these approaches to the brokenness of our world is inadequate this morning. Throughout this book of Habakkuk, we believe that Habakkuk is showing us a faithful response to the brokenness in our world. And this morning, I think what he's going to show us is that rather than looking away from the brokenness, or just looking right at the brokenness and nothing else, or looking across the brokenness at the person causing that brokenness, he would actually invite us to do 3 or 4 different things. He'd tell us actually to look out, and then to look up, and then to speak up and look ahead. Those are our 4 points this morning. That's what we're going to see as we walk through these verses from Habakkuk this morning. And how do we deal faithfully with the brokenness in our world? So first, I want to look at how Habakkuk looks out. We see this in verses 3 and 4. He says, God, why do you make me see iniquity? Why do you look idly at wrong? He says, destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. So the law is paralyzed and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous. So justice goes forth perverted. So Habakkuk looks out at the world and he gives a pretty comprehensive summary of the brokenness that he sees in the world. If you remember last week, I shared that Habakkuk's country, Judah, had recently been overtaken by Egypt, right? The Egyptian king had murdered their king, and then he had sent his son away, deported his son, and placed another son on the throne, this son, Jehoiakim. And Jehoiakim was using the throne for his own purposes. Rather than serving his people as king, he was serving himself as king. Great brokenness in Judah. And here Habakkuk lists specifically ways in which he's seeing the brokenness of this world. He calls it iniquity. This is just kind of like general wickedness, the general sinfulness of the people. He calls it wrong, and this is more kind of a interpersonal wrong, ways in which people were causing or not relieving the suffering of others as they should. He names destruction. This is just ruin. Maybe it was physical ruin of people destroying things, but also it could have been the destruction of society as it was meant to be run. He says there's violence. This is just what it sounds like. People injuring one another, physical abuse of others, leaders inciting physical harm amidst their people. This word strife, he says, it's more of a legal term. This is people using the justice system for their own gain. And then finally, he says that there's contention. This is more like squabbling between various groups, maybe some political conflict. At this time, there were people who said, you know what, let's just join up with Babylon. And there were others who said, no, we don't want to be so progressive. We have to stay with our conservative kind of religious history and stay faithful to what we've been doing. Squabbling amidst political groups. This is what Habakkuk sees as he looks over and around Judah and he sees the brokenness of his world. He sees sin everywhere. People who were supposed to be the people of God, not living in light of how God created them to live. Neighbors taking advantage of neighbors. Leaders resorting to violence. People using the legal system for their own gain. Political groups bickering and arguing. And this leads Habakkuk to his ultimate conclusion here in verse 4. So the law is paralyzed. The law here that he's referring to is the Torah. It was essentially their Bible at the time. And what he's saying is, God, it seems like your word is just worthless. It's impotent. There's nothing that it can do. It's not able to deal with the problems of our times. He says, justice never goes forth. Because no one's paying attention to God and the way that he designed the world to work, justice never prevails. He says, there's no situation in which true justice is happening. He says, even those few who would pursue the right justice, these righteous people, they are surrounded by wicked. As one commentator notes, the righteous are outnumbered by those who wield all the influence of wealth and have powerful vested interests in making sure that injustice prevails for their own benefit. This is the brokenness that Habakkuk sees as he looks across Judah. And as I'm describing this, you might be thinking to yourself, is he describing ancient Israel and Judah or 21st century America? Indeed, the way that Habakkuk's current cultural moment reflects ours is not hard to see. Although for some of us, it might be. Some of us actually are able to be so insulated from the brokenness of this world that our first point this morning is that we have to see the brokenness if we're going to live faithfully within it. Because many of us aren't directly affected by the broken down and not seeing all of the practice for us to see it. Many of us can live with our heads down and not seeing all of the brokenness around it. And so we need to learn from Habakkuk that the first step to living faithfully in a broken world is seeing the brokenness of our world. if we would pause for just a minute, and we're going to do that here now. If we looked out across our world and saw the brokenness, we would see globally that 92 countries are currently involved in conflicts beyond their borders. This is likely more than any other time in history. 110 million people are living as refugees or have had to leave their homes due to violence. Last year, 162,000 people died because of war. Just in the past week, we saw on the news that 6 Israeli hostages had been killed. I made myself, because again, I'm very good at just ignoring brokenness, I made myself read an article about these people, these 6 just normal people. A 23-year-old Israeli-American named Hirsch Goldberg Polin, a 32-year-old named Alexander Lebanon. He was married. He had 2 children. One of them had been born while he was in captivity. Carmel Gatz, a 40-year-old woman. She was taken from her parents' home. 27-year-old Amog Saris was trying to save his girlfriend's life when he was taken. Eden Yerushalmi, a 24-year-old bartender, was on the phone with her sister when she was taken. Sri Danino, a 25-year-old, was trying to help others escape when he was kidnapped. These 6 people taken hostage, held captive for almost a year, and then brutally murdered. Violence, iniquity, wrong, and destruction. We live in a broken world, but really we don't have to look even beyond the borders of our own country to see this, do we? We all know that contention and strife seem to be 2 words that best describe our country right now. A recent poll shows that 87% of Americans believe that political polarization is a threat to our country. 80% of partisan Americans believe that the other party poses a threat that, if not stopped, will destroy America as we know it. Strife and contention. And the violence. The day I began writing this sermon, we got news of 2 14-year-olds and 2 teachers killed in a school shooting in Georgia, with a 14-year-old named as a suspect. And this was the 45th school shooting of 2024. We don't even have to look beyond the borders of our own state to see the brokenness, do we? It's not news that Fairfield County statistically has the greatest wealth discrepancy between its residents of any place in the country. Where the top 1% of earners in our county earn 73 times the amount of the other 99%. We know that this discrepancy can be seen even within our own neighborhoods of Fairfield and Black Rock and Greater Bridgeport. We know that our school system is broken. There's issues with rent and affordable housing, even human trafficking. Brokenness, even locally. And then for some of us, we don't even have to look beyond our own front doors to see the brokenness of our world. Within our homes, we feel the strife and contention, maybe even the violence, destruction, wrong, and iniquity. Brothers and sisters, we have to see the brokenness of our world. Many of us in Black Rock, Fairfield, Trumbull, Stratford, we can insulate ourselves from the brokenness. Certainly, even the brokenness of our own lives, but it goes beyond that as well. We have to see the brokenness in order to live faithfully in it. How often have we looked out and just grieved the brokenness for what it is? We're so quick to politicize or turn this into some larger conversation rather than just naming evil for evil. Grieving the brokenness in our world. This is what Habakkuk does. He looks out and he lists 6 ways in which he's experiencing the brokenness of his world. We too ought to go and look and name and see the brokenness of our world, but we can't stop there. I know some of you might be like, man, I'm overwhelmed by the brokenness. I don't need to see any more brokenness. Well, we can't just look at the brokenness of our world, but we also have to look up at the God of our world. This is where Habakkuk begins in our reading today. Verses 1 and 2, he says, "O Lord, how long shall I cry for help and you will not hear? Or cry to you violence and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity and why do you look idly at wrong?" By the time he puts pen to paper here, it seems like Habakkuk has spent a good bit of time looking out and even looking up. And this causes him to ask 2 questions which I believe, reflect what he sees when he looks up, reflect what he believes about God. Because the questions that we ask people, it reflects what we believe about them, right? So like when my kids want something, they typically don't come to me. They typically go to mom, right? Do we all have one parent maybe growing up that we tended to go to? We knew, we believed that they were probably more likely to say yes than another. Yeah, we all probably had that one parent. I'm not that parent, unfortunately. What we ask of someone reflects what we believe about them. And so by looking at Habakkuk's questions to God, we can see what he believes about God. The first question that Habakkuk asks God is, how long? He's basically saying, God, I don't know how much longer I can take this. How much longer can I endure? And what is it that he can't take much longer? What is it that he's feeling he needs to endure? It's not actually the brokenness of this world, but it's actually God's silence within the brokenness of this world, that he doesn't know how much longer he can take. And this is because Habakkuk knows that God is a God who hears. This is something that's fundamental to God's relationship with his people, that he's a God who hears. I mentioned last week that the Israelites had been enslaved in Egypt and that God freed them miraculously from slavery in Egypt. Do you know why he freed them? He freed them because they cried out to him and he heard them. In Exodus 2, it says it like this. The people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and they cried out for help. Their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God and God heard their groaning. So Habakkuk looks out at the brokenness of this world, and then he looks up to a God who he knows to be a God who hears. We see that in this first question, how long? And then he asks this next question, the question that we've been asking the last few weeks here, why? He feels he needs some explanation because God's not acting according to how Habakkuk would expect him to act. Specifically here, Habakkuk looks up and he sees a God who saves. This also is one of God's fundamental characteristics. Just before God gives the Israelites the Ten Commandments, he reminds them of this. He says, I am the God who freed you from slavery, who saved you from slavery. In Isaiah 43, what we read a couple weeks ago, he says, God describes himself this way. He says, I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior. In Psalm 68, where our call to worship was from this morning, the people say, our God is a God of salvation. This is what Habakkuk's God does. He saves. And so we, like Habakkuk, when we look out and we see the brokenness of this world, we can't stop there, but we also have to look up and see the God of this world. And in order to see the God of this world rightly, we have to know who he is. And so we need, like Habakkuk, to be in our word, to be in the Bible, to learn about who God is, that when we look up, we might see him rightly. Another plug for our Theology 101 class that's coming up in a couple of weeks. It's going to help us to know God, to see him rightly. We have to know that God is not defined by the brokenness that we see in the world, but God is who he is. And when we can look up, we can see him for who he is, if we know who he is. And yet, there's still a problem. There are times, maybe many times, when we look out and we see the brokenness of our world or even the brokenness of our own lives, and then we look up and we see the God of this world, those two things don't always seem to align. Sometimes it's hard to make sense of the God of this world in light of the brokenness of this world. And so what do we do then? This is what Habakkuk's experiencing. He's saying, God, I know that you're supposed to be a God who hears, but I've been crying out for a long time and it seems like you're deaf. He says, I know that you're supposed to be a God who saves, but I feel like I'm witnessing a murder in the streets and you're just walking by uninterested. What do you do when you feel this gap? Have you felt it? Can you think even right now of ways in which you've experienced this gap between what you know to be true about God and how you experience him in the world? Isn't it comforting that we have Habakkuk here naming this gap? Because this is what we must do. When we experience gaps in our faith, when we look out and then we look up, we now must speak up. We must name those gaps in our faith. This is what Habakkuk models for us this morning. Looking out and seeing the brokenness of the world, looking up and seeing the God of this world, he models what to do when those two things don't align. He speaks up. First, he names it. He names God to God. He sees God there, a God who's supposed to hear and is supposed to save, and he tells God that. He says, God, you're supposed to be a God who hears. How long are you going to keep being deaf to my cries? God, I know you're supposed to be a God who saves. How long until you come back and save and do what you're supposed to do? He speaks up. He names God to God. And then, as we saw, he names the brokenness of this world to God, specifically lists ways in which he's experiencing the brokenness of this world. Iniquity, wrong, destruction, violence, strife, contention. Habakkuk doesn't just look out and then look up, but Habakkuk allows his looking out and his looking up to lead him to action, namely speaking to God about what he sees and the gap between what he sees in the world and what he knows about God. I think, friends, that we need to grow in our ability to speak up when we experience a gap in our faith. When we experience a gap between what we see about God and his word, what we know about him to be true, and then what we see in the world and the brokenness of this world, and how we expect him to act and how he's not always acting in alignment with what we would expect. This is part of a long-standing Christian tradition of lament, calling out to God, naming this reality that God, you don't always act as we expect you to act in the brokenness of our world. So how do we do this? Well, first, like I said, we need to grow in our understanding of who God is. Grow in our ability to name God, to proclaim our faith even when it doesn't make sense to us. And even to proclaim ways in which our faith doesn't make sense to us. And maybe I take it a step further, as Habakkuk does here. I think we need to grow in our boldness to call God to act in alignment with who he is. This is what Habakkuk does. He names to God who God is, and then he calls him to act in accordance with who he is. Why don't we do this? I think I'm not very confident in my knowledge of God. I don't feel like I know God enough to call him to act in line with who he is. I don't know what might keep you from speaking to God this way, but you can. And the second thing that he names is the brokenness. We have to grow in our ability not just to see the brokenness of our world, but to name the brokenness of our world. To call brokenness for what it is. Name evil for evil. More regularly and intentionally bringing the brokenness of our lives, our towns, our world to God and ask him to act. I think Habakkuk models for us a boldness that we tend to lack in our culture. You might, like me, be a little suspicious of this. Like, why? What's the point of this? Why are we naming God to God? Why do we need to name brokenness to God? He knows who he is. He knows the brokenness of this world. Well, I think for a few reasons for our own souls. First, it brings dignity. First, it brings dignity to God. If we don't name the gaps in our faith, we try to cross those gaps ourselves, don't we? And so when we don't see God acting in accordance with who he is, maybe we start to question who God is. Well, God maybe just isn't actually a God who hears. Maybe God doesn't really care about these little sufferings in my life. We bring God down to a level that we can comprehend and understand why he's acting or not acting in a certain situation. And so we don't bring God the dignity that he deserves, but naming to God who he is and calling him to act in accordance with who he is dignifies God as God. It also dignifies evil as evil. Because another way that we might try to cross our faith gaps in our lives is that we try to downplay evil as what it is. Okay, well, maybe it's not that bad. Maybe the situation's not as bad as I think it is. I'm not just understanding everything so clearly. But naming evil for evil dignifies the victims of evil and the evil as what it is. Names the world as actually broken. It changes the narrative that the perpetrators of evil would want us to believe, that it's not so bad. As us, we must give evil the weight that it deserves. And then finally, it dignifies us as human beings. Anytime that we're trying to cross this gap ourselves, we're trying to live outside of our design. We are designed as human beings. We saw this in Genesis with limitations. God designed us intentionally with limitations. This isn't a result of sin. This is part of how we were designed. And so we dignify ourselves as humans when we name the reality that God is God and we are not. And there's oftentimes gaps between how we would expect him to act and how he's acting. Naming this reality is living in light of our design. Secondly, we would name these realities because of the possibility that it brings. By naming the gaps in our faith, we actually open up the possibility that God will act as God. Again, when we try to cover this gap ourselves, we're doing God's job for him, or trying to do God's job for him. But if we name the gaps in our faith, then this allows God to show up. Maybe God to grant us understanding about a situation that we didn't previously have. Maybe God to miraculously intervene. Can you imagine? God actually being God, acting miraculously in this world to bring about his purposes? So often I think we try to cross the gap ourselves, and so we don't get to see God be God. And then finally, I think that we should name these realities because of the responsibility that it brings to us. What we might find is that as we bring our lament and our longings to God, we might actually find that he's calling us to act in accordance with that lament. Habakkuk had zero power in his situation. He was a prophet who was under the threat of death. But we might have power over some of the brokenness of our world. And maybe God will call us to act in accordance with the power that we have, to try to fill the gap by his power. Maybe we have a responsibility over some of the brokenness we're experiencing. I think, honestly, that's part of the reason why I'm hesitant to name evil as evil, because I'm afraid of how God's going to call me to act in response. So we have to look out, we have to look up, and when there's a gap between what we see, we have to speak up. And finally, all of this we do while looking ahead, while facing forward. Although our passage this morning doesn't get there, we have more clarity than Habakkuk did about who God is and how God acts. Because you know, there's no one in human history, not Habakkuk, certainly not us, who could say what Habakkuk said with more truth, with more weight, with more clarity than Jesus Christ. God himself. Jesus, the one who was on the cross, forsaken by God. He, even more so than Habakkuk, cried out and no one answered. He asked God to save him and God did not act. He saw iniquity to the point that 2 Corinthians says he became sin. He took the fullness of sin and iniquity on himself. He experienced violence and destruction, strife and contention, a paralyzed law, a lack of justice. He was the righteous, surrounded by wicked. All of this was fully endured to the fullest extent, not by Habakkuk, not by us, but by God himself and Jesus Christ. And Christ endured all of this. Why? For the joy that was set before him. You see, Jesus knew what Habakkuk didn't. Jesus knows in a way that we don't yet, but will one day, that there is resurrection on the other side of death. Jesus endured the suffering of the cross for the joy of the resurrection and his ascension. And we can know because of Jesus that God continues to work by this principle of resurrection. That we believe, as Romans 8 said, which we've read the last couple of weeks, that all things are working together for the good of those who love God, that he's working all things together for your salvation. That these mysterious gaps will one day be made clear. As we're resurrected and we rise with God in the perfect world that we were created for. But this only comes through death. And all the suffering and all the brokenness will somehow lead to life for us. If we could just hang on by faith. But even with that, this gap between who we know God to be and how God acts in light of the brokenness of our world, sometimes it's still excruciatingly painful. I know that some of you are personally right now experiencing the brokenness of this world in a real, visceral way. And so I believe that we, like Habakkuk, need to name that to God. And I believe that he's given us this community in which we can name that. That we are meant to name the brokenness and our longings to God and to one another. And we might actually be the means by which that gap is crossed for another in our community. Or maybe we'll just be another voice that we can echo our friends, our brothers and sisters' cries to God and ask him to act. That is what our community is for. Part of what our community does is laments together. And so I want us to grow in our practice, our ability to name the gaps in our faith, even boldly, not just to God, but also to one another. And in this, we might experience the miraculous movement of God in us. So I want to invite the music team to come up and play a song of response. And as they do this, we're actually going to have a chance to practice what we preach. I want to invite you to name gaps to God. You could do that silently, or if you're so bold, out loud. We're a community that's rooted in the grace of the gospel, and so we can name our gaps not just to God, but to one another. And so I want to invite you to pray this prayer. You can pray, God, I don't understand how you can be blank, how you are who you say you are when I look up, and yet allow blank. Whatever the brokenness of this world is that you're seeing. This is naming the gap. This is lament. This is part of what it looks like to live faithfully in the midst of the brokenness of this world. God, I don't know how you can be just and allow such an unjust system. That causes some to suffer and some to not. For the rich to get richer and the poor to get poorer. I don't understand it, God. What is it for you, even personally or locally or globally, that you're grieving right now? You can name that quietly or out loud. The music team will play and sing a little bit over you, but I want to invite you just to take a moment to reflect and to lament the gaps that we feel.